So, have you ever felt that nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. It even sounds nasty, doesn't it? Well, we have an exciting show planned for you today. Chris Swanson, a father who tragically lost his daughter to a genetic disorder, and we'll be talking about his grief process of a bereaved parent. So please stay tuned. You will not want to miss this interview. I am your host today, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember them? Every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they want to tell you about the emergency talk that they always give you. You know that if there's a loss in cabin pressure and your oxygen mask falls from the ceiling, that you should put your mask on first before you help your child with their mask. It sounds like such a selfish thing to do, doesn't it? But the reason they tell you to do that is because they know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above their needs. And then you won't be of any help to anybody. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. They like to put everyone else's needs above their own and neglect their own health. Well, on this show, we also like to talk about grief and loss here because that's part of the grief process, and that's certainly part of caregiving, and the devastating effects that it can certainly have on us. It automatically throws us into the grief process. Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through the grief process. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck and need some help. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me, my radio podcast, my books, my videos, by going to my website. I made it real simple for you, DaveNass.com. That's N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam, Nass, DaveNass.com. And if that's too hard for you, just put the name of the show in there, Dave, the Caregivers, Caregiver.com, and that'll get you there, too. Also, register your visit with me, and I'm going to send you two really, really neat gifts. First, a PDF copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. So don't miss out on this cool freebie. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest, Chris Swanson. There you go. Chris, welcome to the show. Sorry you had to sit through all that
stuff. How you doing, Dave?
Good, good, good. Thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. If it was any better, I just couldn't stand it. So, Chris, I want you to introduce yourself because I think you could do a much better job than me. I want you to tell us and, you know, my radio listening audience about yourself and your family and what you do for a living. Let's start off with that.
Yeah, it sounds good. Obviously, like you mentioned, my name is Chris Swanson. I'm happily married. My wife, Monica, and I have been married for 9 years. We have two beautiful daughters, a daughter who's going to be 7 on Monday, so she's excited for her birthday. And as you know, we have a recent birth to the family, 8-week-old, Brooke,
wow.
Who obviously just joined us. So we're going through that exciting period.
No sleep, right?
Santa Clarita. Oh, yeah, no sleep, but enjoying every minute of it. We're Santa Clarita residents. We've been up here for about 10 years. Love the community. Obviously, a member of Higher Vision Church, which we adore. Been there for about a year, found our church home. Just an amazing place and also just an amazing group of, you know, friends and people to fellowship with that, you know, help us through our process and still helping us through our grieving process, you know, which happened 5 years ago now.
Yes, and thanks for that shameless plug for Higher Vision Church, because they're my church as well, and I think they are the best church that I've ever gone to in the 40 years that I've been a Christian. And for those of you who are looking for a great church, HigherVisionChurch.com. You won't be disappointed. Our pastor, Jared Ming, he's a great preacher and a great musician, psalmist, you name it, he does it. And he's got a fantastic staff that helps him because he couldn't do it alone. All right, commercial's over. Well, thanks for introducing yourself, Chris. I would like you, if you would, to please, let's get into this interview, and please explain what were the circumstances that led up to the death of your beautiful son, Ty.
Yeah, so like I said, basically growing up, just to give the listeners an idea of also too, a little bit of my background, you know, I grew up in a non-Christian home, a wonderful family. Actually, you know, grew up kind of enjoying the church aspect, but never really getting involved, never having a relationship with the Lord. Like I said, we got married. My beautiful wife and I got married. We had a beautiful daughter in 2007. And then in 2009, we were blessed to be give birth to a beautiful son named Ty. Leading up to the birth, just the same that we had with our daughter, Isabel, everything was great up until probably the six-month checkup, you know, before the birth. They noticed some differences in my wife with the growth of the baby in the womb. We kind of got put on a different path. We were recommended to some specialists who started to see us and kind of wanted to see why, you know, the baby wasn't growing as much as it should be in the belly. And they kind of guided us along, but, you know, to a point where there's nothing alarming. It was just seemed like the baby was just a little bit small. So on May 18th, 2009, our beautiful son Ty was born. He was born small. He was 4 pounds, 11 ounces. But according to the doctors at that time, everything looked great. You know, he, besides being small, he was healthy. He looked great. We went through the normal process in the hospital, and we were home in, 2 to 3 days, like any other family that gives birth. And we, like now, like I said, we had our two-year-old, and we had a beautiful boy, and, you know, we were ready to enjoy the fruits. As time went on, like I said, the first month we were home, everything was great. And then we started seeing some changes, some things that were just a little off for us. My son started to not be able to eat. And, you know, obviously the biggest thing with babies, you know, sleeping, eating, doing all the good stuff. And we just noticed that just the eating habits were very poor. So we started to get a little bit concerned. We started to ask a couple more questions. And basically after 1 month, that's when everything started to unfortunately unravel on us. We were admitted into hospital for the first time with RSV. My son had difficult breathing. He was basically what he was doing. He was aspirating when he was eating his food, and they didn't know why. So we got into the hospital for a couple days. They did some tests, and even after that point, we were sent home, and basically said everything's fine. They're just different things. They didn't know if it was colicky. They didn't know, you know, there's a couple of other issues that they thought might be the cause. So we accepted that, those answers, and we took them home. But as time went on, we realized that something else was going on, something more serious. You know, at that point, we didn't know how serious, but we knew something just wasn't right. So basically over the next month or two, Ty was in and out of hospitals. We'd go anywhere in for 2 days to 10 days at a time. And at this time now we had not just the one doctor, we had about 5 doctors. And everything from lung doctors to cardiologists, brain doctors, they were doing scopes on his lungs. They were doing scans on his brain. They couldn't figure out why he was failing to thrive, failing to grow. Like I said, his eating habits were poor, and what was happening due to the aspiration, he kept on, every time he'd eat, every now and then he'd inhale, and actually the milk would be going into his lungs, which would be causing pneumonia. Unfortunately, this was an ongoing process the first couple months. And like I said, coming from myself and my wife, who, you know, all we knew, we had a two-year-old who was perfectly healthy at the time, so this is just a big shock for us, and obviously just a big concern.
Wow.
You know, we still just felt it was something that was going to be repairable, something that the doctors were going to find, something simple fix where, you know, we can figure out the issue and get my son bigger and get him healthy and get him home and start living our life.
And so you were staying optimistic and positive.
Very optimistic. Even, you know, talking to the doctors, they were just a little baffled, but to the point of just, you know, there's definitely a lot of optimism that, you know, we're going to figure out what was going on and we're going to get him back on track. And this, like I said, he was born in May, so now we're June and July, and things just kept on getting worse. And we had gone in and out of hospital stays now for, you know, a week to 2 weeks at a time. Like I said, we had multiple doctors, including doctors overseas that were actually receiving his blood samples, trying to figure out what was going on.
Wow.
And unfortunately, like I said, things just kept on kind of unraveling downhill. In October of 2009, we actually got admitted to Children's Hospital, and actually just went in for an appointment. Because we're still struggling through the basic feeding issues and the basic issues, mm-hmm. You know, that we'd struggled with the last 4 or 5 months. And basically in October 2009, just to go in for a normal appointment checkup, they actually looked at us and said, we have to admit, we can't send him home like this. His signs are, you know, what we're seeing and what we're looking at, it's not looking like he's okay to go home. We need to get him on oxygen. We need to see what, you know, we need to dig deeper. And basically from October through December, he was in Children's Hospital. And like I said, doctors every day just trying to figure out what's going on. They had pinpointed to genetics, even though they didn't really give us specifics on what type of genetics, which was baffling to us because, like I said, I had a 2-year-old daughter who was perfectly healthy. I mean, you know, 90th percentile and everything and just thriving and doing great and just being a normal 2-year-old. We've had no signs of any issues in our family on either side, my wife's side or my side, from any genetic diseases in the past. So it's just very strange to kind of hear that term come up and kind of asking, you know, questions on, well, I don't understand.
You think to this day they don't really know exactly what happened?
To this day, they have told us they don't know exactly what has happened.
Wow.
He, like I said, he was in Children's from October to December. A couple weeks in, he actually went into he aspirated and went into an pneumonia issue, which filled both of his lungs, so he was rushed into the ICU, and that's where we stayed for the next 2.5 weeks,
wow.
Not knowing what's going on. The doctors, like I said, they pinpointed genetics. The way they described it to us was we know what city it's in, we just don't know what street or address it's at. And that's the specifics with genetics. There's so many different avenues, so many different things with genetics that, you know, children that have issues, even being 14, 15, 16 years old, in all the testing over the years, they still weren't able to figure out or still not able to figure out, you know, pinpoint what's going on there. So, like I said, our son was transported into the ICU in late November of 2009, and we spent about 2.5 weeks there. And on December 3rd, he passed away.
Oh. Wow. What was your first initial reaction? First of all, I want to apologize for having to have you recount all of this. It must be very, very painful. I can't even imagine. I've never lost a child, but, you know, the worst that I've come to feeling kind of on a minuscule level of what you're feeling is when I had to take my 4-year-old daughter to the hospital one time because she had a bladder infection. And I just remember, you know, when you're there with your little kid and they're kind of scared and the hospital is a very intimidating place, you know, I just started breaking down because I said, oh, my gosh, you know, what if my daughter was going to die, you know? And I just started imagining, you know, the grief that a parent went through just knowing that. So that's the closest that I can relate to what you're going through. But I know there's many, many parents out there who have been through exactly what you're going through. Some of them are through it, kind of like you are, but many of them, it's happening as we speak. So you're in a great position, you know, and God allows these things to happen, I believe, for the sole purpose of helping others. And we don't know why this happens. Somebody told me one time who had their daughter go to heaven that God reached down and he picked a flower from his garden. And we can come up with all sorts of little cliches and things to make us feel better. But the bottom line is there's no guarantees and there's no promises when we come into the world. God is in total control of things. He's totally sovereign. And these children really aren't ours. He lends them to us, and we're to raise them, and then we give them back to him, and then he does with them as he does. I just want to let you know that I know this is difficult for you to even speak of, but I wanted to know, probably familiar with the grief process now, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, all of that, but when you and your wife first realized that your son had just died, how did you handle the grief? What was the first thing, first emotion that you felt? I mean, was it denial? And were you even aware that you were going through a grief process? Did you even know what a grief process was? So maybe if you could share some of those early feelings, if you would, for the benefit of the listeners who might be going through the same thing.
Yeah, you know what? The biggest thing for me, especially actually even going through the process in the hospital, during the whole time he was in the hospital, especially those last 2 months, never once did I think he was going to get to the point where he wasn't going to make it. Always hopeful. I was always in belief that, okay, we're going to figure it out. Something's going to come up. Doctors are going to figure out what's going on, and yeah, we're going to be okay. Up until the final hours, in all honesty, I was in denial. Mm. With him being that little and being in the hospital, and like you said, it's just a terrifying thing. It's a helpless feeling being in a hospital for all those parents who have experienced this, to be in a hospital and to be basically having no say or no justice in what's going on. Right. You're basically just a bystander, and you're praying for your child, and you're seeing your child going through this, which you wish you can just switch places with them. I mean, every parent would know they'll do it in a heartbeat to switch places, sure, with them. And I was the same way, and my wife as well. And it was going through the denial process. And I think during the process, in the last week or so, I think my wife was a little easier to accept what was coming.
Really?
Me, I kind of put up my boundaries, and I wasn't accepting that. I was fighting just like he had fought to the end.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't giving up. I wasn't giving up until that last night when we sat there, and he was hooked up to every imaginable wire that, you know, they have. And basically I just held him. I sat with him in the chair, and he sat on my lap, and we had a surreal experience there as well. We had a lot of family, a lot of my wife's family. They're all believers. They had come down, and they were all in the room with us, and we played worship music, and we prayed. And it was an amazing, amazing moment that even to this day my wife and I, you know, going through what we were going through at that time, with the darkness being there, with the hour being there, we lifted him up and we played worship music, and we mm-hmm. passed him around, and everybody got to hold him and pray with him and love on him. He had a smile, and to this day my wife and I, that's part of my acceptance, was knowing how peaceful he was. And just the whole process, how peaceful there was in that room. I mean, the Holy Spirit was in that room, and there's no denying that. Even family and friends who are non-believers, they look back to that day and say there was something going on in that room at that time, because at the darkest moment, you're supposed to be down and crying and on the ground, and, mm-hmm. and we were lifting him up, and that was a hard thing to do, being having my son in my arms at that time, but the Holy Spirit was leading us, and I totally believe that. And to this day, everybody who was there with us, family members or not, they say that was one of the most incredible days, and the amount of peace that was in that room at that time. So that was the experience, which was just breathtaking to extent of the feeling, but also to the denial process, the realization of what had just gone on, and basically saying having to move on with life after that day. It's uh-huh. extremely difficult, extremely difficult.
Wow. How long before he died did all that happen in the room?
At that hour. It was that hour.
So within the hour. So you were able to hold yeah. him in your arms and all of that 1 hour before he died?
He passed away in my arms, and we were able wow. at that point, the doctors had told us that he wasn't going to make it.
So they took all the tubes and stuff off of them?
They took all the tubes off, and we held them, and we passed them around, and we enjoyed his final minutes. And as hard as that was, I mean, it's looking back, I'm grateful to be able to experience and for all of our family to be with him. And because during the process for the 6 months, a lot of our family were not able to be with him because he was in and out of hospitals. They didn't really get to know him. So that time, the hospital was amazing. We worshipped. We had music in there, and it was a surreal experience.
That is amazing that they allowed you to do that. That's awesome that you all got to say goodbye to him and hold him and just cherish him. How would you compare how your wife was taking all this to you? You said that she kind of popped out of denial before you, but who was taking it harder, or was it both equally hard for both of you? I know women kind of process things differently.
Yeah. You know what? She definitely, I think, accepted it a lot sooner than I did. Maybe being the man or whatever it be. You know, I hadn't accepted it obviously up until it happened, and then it's the realization of actually having to deal with the acceptance, which is, you know, extremely difficult. I think for her, she had given it to God a lot sooner than I had. I was fighting to the end, and I was not giving up. I wasn't thrown in the towel. I felt that that's what I needed to do for my boy. And it's not that she didn't do that, but I think she realized that God had already called him home. Yeah. And I think she was definitely a little more at peace with letting him go than I was at first.
Well, this would be a good time for a two-minute break. We're talking to Chris Swanson, bereaved parent, lost his son, if you just tuned in. And we will be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back with Chris Swanson telling us about the experience of losing a son. Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Let's move on to the next stage of denial, which would be anger. Did you and your wife, Monica, also experience some anger, you know, which is the next stage of the grief process? And if so, who was that anger directed at, or what was that anger directed at? If you could just take a couple minutes and share your experiences with that second stage of denial?
Yeah, definitely. I think as soon as we lost my son, obviously, you know, besides the denial aspect, anger always you know, I think plays a factor to what level. Everybody's a little bit different. In general, I'm a very down-to-earth, humble person. I don't really anger easily, so anger is not my big thing, even at a time of losing a child. My issue, I think, after denial was more just the disappointment that why us? Why Ty? Not that you wish it on anybody else, but why would something like this happen to a family who we feel we're good people, we're always there to help people. We feel that we're living in the world, but we're living through Christ and doing our best. Why would this happen to us and just tear us down like this? So my anger was there. I wasn't necessarily angry at God and saying, you know, why did you do this? I was more angry at God, I believe. I did direct anger that way during the process just because I felt so hopeless and helpless during the stage. After the passing, I think it was more of just sadness, still in the denial phase, and I think just angry the fact that it happened, and to me it felt that, you know, our lives would never be the way they were.
And Monica, what do you think she was thinking or feeling,
Monica,
I should say?
I think we definitely dealt with the grief process different. I was a little more, besides the sadness and the denial, for myself, I basically disengaged from the world, basically just keeping to myself, keeping my feelings, keeping my hurt, keeping everything kind of bottled up. Monica was a little more outward speaking with knowing where he's at. She definitely accepted it a lot sooner than I did. She gave it to God a lot more freely than I did. In all honesty,
it's that woman's intuition. They've got it over on us, man.
There you go. Yeah, so she definitely reacted different. I was angry. I still remember that night. Just coming home and just being drained mentally, being drained physically, obviously just really not even comprehending what had just happened to us and to our family. And I think the anger came in also too that night. I remember getting home, and it was extremely late. We picked up my daughter from a friend's house and came home, and I'll never forget, within 2 hours, my two-year-old was awake and throwing up, and we had to take her into the emergency room.
Oh, my gosh.
And here we were, just lost a child within the last 6 hours, and I'm in another emergency room with my two-year-old. And I just really thought to myself, like, Lord, I don't know what to do. I felt the enemy had his foot on my throat. That was the time to tap out and just say, I'm done. You know, to basically say, you know, taking my son wasn't enough. Now, you know, within 6 hours, I'm in another hospital dealing with this. Just unimaginable. But looking back, like you said, it was the enemy's way of still coming at us. But we got past that night. Obviously, here we are 5 years later. We're in a totally different place now than we were then, which I know you're going to probably ask about. But through the whole grief process, my wife was definitely more forgiving. She was more accepting of what had happened when he had gone. She was grateful for the 6.5 months he was here, which we both were. But I was more in the stage of just a little upset, still in denial, still in the grief process, kind of the depression process.
You know, it reminds me of the story in the Bible where King David and Bathsheba, you know, had a baby. And God decided to not let that baby live, but that was for obviously different reasons, because he had committed adultery with another man's wife and it had the man killed, and so he wasn't going to allow that baby to live. And the king was like fasting and praying. He was on his face. He wouldn't eat. He wouldn't sleep. And everyone was worried about him. They says, eat something. He says, no, no, no. And then finally when the child died, he got up and he cleaned himself and he ate, and they were confused. He says, you know, when the child was alive, you wouldn't eat. Now the child died, you're okay? And he says, when the child was still alive, I thought perhaps God would have mercy. But now that he's died, what can I do? He can't come and see me, but one day I will go and see him. And I think that was a thought that comforts any parent, that he's not gone. There will be a day that we are reunited. I'm sure you've thought about that. I guess there would have been some bargaining prayers going on with you and God during this time. You know, losing a child can be very challenging on one's faith.
Yep.
And
yep.
I know you touched on it, but tell us kind of about what was going on with you guys and God during this, your darkest hour.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and for the listeners out there, you know, I was raised amazing family, but not in the Christian faith. At first, I thought it was ironic, but I know there's, you know, irony. It doesn't come into play where, you know, I was baptized the same year my son was born, during that same 6 months that he passed. So for 35 years of my life, even though I knew the church, I didn't have a relationship with the Lord. We'd gone to church, we'd been involved off and on. But up until that year before he was born, that's when we really started to get plugged in, my wife and I. And then to be baptized in July of 2009 was no coincidence. You know, to be baptized of him saying, you know, Chris, now's the time to bring you to Christ, to realize who's your Savior, because he knew what was coming ahead in the next couple months. So for 35 years I was unsaved, and then within the 4 months that I got saved is when everything changed in my life. And I think that was obviously for a reason.
Wow.
You know, for him to bring that security to me, to know that there's someone to lean on, someone to be there with. And I, looking back, I'm pretty amazed how there's plenty of times in my life that I could have found the Lord sooner, I could have been baptized sooner, I could have done a lot of things different, but to be that same period in my life, in July, to be baptized and to go through this in December of the same year.
Yeah, getting saved and getting baptized, no guarantee that life's going to be a bed of roses. You know, in fact, he promises that there's going to be persecution, that the whole world is being persecuted. We're not being treated any differently. The rain falls on the good and the bad alike, but the difference is we have the Lord to get it through. And I don't know how these people go through life, or go through losing a child, or go through cancer, or any other life event without the Lord. I just don't get it. You know, so you're very fortunate that, and you were a brand new believer at the time as well. So that's very unusual, and you're a very special guy.
Yeah, I was a brand new believer, and I think at the time too, it was easy to say, well, maybe this is not the right way, and you know, it was easy to make an excuse. You know, a lot of people make excuses when things happen, to say, well, obviously following the Lord is, you know, look, this is what's happened, and you know, I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to live in the world, and my wife and I, we chose not to. We chose to choose a different route. Obviously, the next period in life after he passed, that was the most extreme heartache that we've gone through as a family.
You have a choice. You can let it make you better, or you can let it make you bitter.
And it's not easy. It's not an easy choice, because it's easy to choose the bitter. It's easy to look at your circumstances that life has dealt you and say, well, you know, why should I believe, or why should I, you know, be happy, or why should I, you know, go on with my life? This is what's happened to me. We both experienced things different. I disengaged from the world for a while, even though I was present with my wife, with my daughter. I was present at work. Inside, I was really grieving. You know, I'd drive to work, and I literally would cry on my way to work and dry up the tears when I got to work, walk in like I was strong, do what I had to do, and then on the way home, I'd tear up again. And my wife, she would deal differently. She, even though she accepted things earlier, she actually went through a stage shortly after where she got into a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, and that tore her down after that process. So you have a husband.
She was doing pretty good with, sorry for interrupting, she was doing pretty good with the denial and with the bargaining, but then the anger even. But then when it came to the depression, it hit her hard.
It got her afterwards.
That is the worst stage. That's the worst stage of grief, depression, and it's the most dangerous stage. Share basically how depression affected both of you at this time as you went into the next stage.
Well, like I said, going into basically he passed in 2009 to December, so 2010. Looking back, to be honest, it was, you know, people that have lost somebody. You live, but you live in a fog. You're functioning. You're in your daily routine, but you're just not engaged. You know, like I said, here I was going through my process of thinking, I guess, I was in the grieving process. Still denial, a lot of sadness. I wouldn't call it depression, but looking back, you know, I was very, could have been depression. And then to have my wife going through something entirely different with her emotions, with her grieving process, dealing with anxiety, depression, you know, things along that line, we're in two different pages. And that's the hardest thing, looking back, and just trying, realizing and wondering, knowing that the only reason we actually are where we're at now is because we both were followers of the Lord. And like you had mentioned a couple of minutes ago, I truly don't believe people who have lost, and not just children, lost, you know, close family members, spouses. I think without the Lord and without the friends and fellowship of the church, and not having someone to lean on like that, I don't know how somebody would get through it. I know through my personal experience, that's the only reason I am who I am today.
Yeah.
My wife is who she is today, and it was not easy. I mean, we broke. We hit rock bottom as a married couple, as a family. You know, here I was trying to still be joyful for my two-year-old, who's amazing,
yeah.
be a husband to my wife, be a provider for my family, but at the same time, dealing with the depression, the anxiety, the things from inside the house. You know, obviously, another thing that happens, too, is, you know, you have issues with all the doctors and whatnot we had been through.
Sure.
Now we're having financial stress. We're having other issues that are basically, it's a combination of things coming at you at one time. And my wife she's a prayer warrior. And even going through her darkest hours, I remember she'd be in her room on her knees praying hard for hours at a time. I was a little more reserved, where I do my prayer time in the car or by myself or quietly. But both of us going through the process at the same time.
Well, Chris, we're going to take another break, and I want to continue this conversation when we come back. I don't know if Monica is free from watching the newborn or if we can sneak her in here during the last 20-minute segment, but see if you can talk to her and see if that's possible during the break. And if not, that's okay. So we will be right back. Chris Swanson.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassani.
And we are back for those who just tuned in. After this program, I might remind you, go back to the link and you can hear the recorded podcast if you missed any portion of it. We're talking with Chris Swanson, a bereaved parent, lost his 6-month-old son, Ty, about 5 years ago, and we're talking about the grief that a parent goes through when they lose a child. Are you there, Chris?
Yeah, I'm here, Dave.
So how long did it take you guys to finally reach acceptance? And that isn't to say that any parent ever gets over the loss of a child, but explain what acceptance meant to you and how long it took you to get there.
You know what? I think to actually figure out accepting the whole incident and whatnot, and just actually, to me, acceptance means kind of being functioning back in the world again.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while. I mean, it's been 5 years, and we're in a different place now, but I'd say it's 3 to 4 years. We definitely, we had our challenges as a family. And like you said, it never goes away, but I think accepting it would be, you know, just to find a place where you put in your heart, have a home for it, and also just know, be able to live day to day, be able to be there for mm-hmm. my daughter, be able to be there for my wife and support her, to smile, to be involved in the world, to be with my family. But it was a long process. We went for definitely a couple years, and to say that it's all gone, it'll never be gone. And for anybody who's lost a child, it shouldn't be gone, you know, because that's mm-hmm. That's a huge part of your family, of your life. But for me personally, I found a home for it in my heart where I put his memory. I think about him every day. We talk about mm-hmm. him every day. You know, we pray for him every night. But to really say I've accepted what's happened, and for the sake of my family, for the sake of my daughter, to be functioning in this world and to be a good human being, to be a good person, to move on, it definitely took a couple years. Looking back on the process, it was a long haul.
Wow. It's amazing. So it took you almost 3 to 4 years to get over this grief. Like I said, the only way to get through the grief process is to go through the grief process. And some people take longer than others. Some people take shorter than others. Everybody grieves in their own ways. Can you tell me, I know your friends and family, and I know this from personal experience because my wife went through a stroke, and any tragic event, sometimes your friends, your family, they don't quite know how to relate to you anymore. They don't know what to say. They're afraid to say anything. They're afraid to even look at you, make eye contact for fear that you might feel uncomfortable, the situation might be awkward. Tell me what are things that friends and family should and should not say to someone who's grieving a loss of a child? Have any personal experience with that?
Yeah, a lot of personal experience with that. You know, like I said, going through the process, we're blessed to have an amazing family. We have just from family and friends who are really supportive. But yeah, a lot of friends that we've had going through the process, they didn't know how to react. And to be honest, a lot of friends that I had after that time did not come around again. And I don't know if it was just because they didn't know what to say or how to react. But yeah. Some, unfortunately, disengaged from us. But also, at the same time, I look back and knowing the fog that myself and my wife lived in and kind of all the issues we were going through, you know, it doesn't mean that we didn't disengage from them. So definitely, I think my family was a little more upbeat. We talk about them, but at the same time, they wouldn't bring it up to a point where it would just keep on bringing us down. So I think everybody deals with a different friends, family. It is a tough thing. Even us being on the other side, somebody who's lost a child, I've known now many people who've lost children. But I think the biggest thing is just to be as compassionate as possible to them and not ask them, are they over it? Not ask them when they think they're going to be better. It's letting them go through their own grief process, but just being there supporting. We had amazing support in all aspects from family and friends, but just being there, caring for someone, caring for the parents, caring for the person that lost someone. You know, I still look back and I remember friends from work who had come to visit at the hospital, friends that I were just acquaintances. They'd taken time out of their day and come visit. We had friends after the process come to our house and just drop off flowers, drop off a card. And it's not about saying anything. It's just about saying, hey, we're here for you if you need us. The love and support, and that's what I recommend to anybody, just being there. Just support them. Let them know you're here for them if they need you. And if they need you, they'll reach out to you.
Yeah. Did you ever join an official support group of, you know, parents who lost children, for example?
We did not. We were recommended to one through a friend of ours who had lost a child about 5 years before us. You know what? The church was our big savior. Our church group was our group that really...
That was your support. Helped.
That was our support group. Not saying that those groups are not helpful, because we know a lot of families who have gone through the groups and are very helpful. And I don't know if it was just denial on our end.
You were very fortunate to already have a group in place. I mean, that's all a support group is. It's designed to be a group where there is no group, you know, where to be support where there is no support. And if you've already got a great support foundation, which it sounds like you do, you know, family is a huge support, then, you know, there's no need for more support if you've got the support you need. So, but I would say to those who don't have support, you know, maybe, you know, not all families are close. Surprise, surprise. Yeah. Some families are very dysfunctional, don't get along well, and maybe they're the ones who keep saying the wrong thing and keep alienating, you know, you from them, keep bringing you down, you know, and so you both kind of disengage because it's just too uncomfortable. Those are the people who probably should look up an official support group with strangers, you know, and no family, since the family is not a good thing in their particular lives. But support is good. Support is essential. You cannot get through this without support. So glad that you had it. How did your marriage survive this loss? Not many do a loss like this.
Yeah, that was our biggest challenge.
Do you know what the odds are?
I've read statistics. I like to say 60 to 70% of families of married couples who lose a child ended up divorcing. And I definitely could see that, definitely going through what we went through, through our separate grieving processes, through not just the fact of losing a child, but also through my wife experiencing her anxiety, her depression, and me kind of disengaging from the family during the process. I, without a doubt, could see how a family doesn't make it. But my wife and I, we made a decision during the process that no matter what happened, we weren't going to break up our family, because we knew that's what the enemy wanted. He wanted us to break up, our marriage, which would obviously, you know, destroy my daughter, my 2-year-old at the time, and just put her into a different realm. And as easy as it would have been to do, because at that time, your mentality, your thinking is different. It's easy to say, you know what, it's too hard to go through this. And every time I see you, I think of him or whatnot. You know, we decided that we weren't going to take that route. And we felt that was just too easy of an excuse to go that route. And we left it up in God's hands. We prayed on it. And we said, we're going to get through this together, no matter how long it took. And like I told you, you know, it'll never be gone, but for 3 to 4 years, and we have friends and family who have recovered a lot sooner, and some people who recovered, it took them longer than that. But we were not going to, our biggest thing was saying, we're not going to let this break our marriage. You know, if we need, if there's certain days to be alone and you need to go. and we offered each other that freedom. And that was a big help, because we knew that each of us were struggling our own ways, but at the end of the day, we had each other.
Well, good for you. And for those of you listening who are feeling like you cannot go through another day of this, that your marriage is suffering, your family is suffering, you're snapping at everybody, and it's just too painful, the message is, hang in there. This too will pass. That's a Bible verse, that everything is temporary, that you will get through this. All things work for good. And I know it's hard to even imagine how something so tragic can have any good in it, but it can. And this family right here is proof that you can make it. You don't have to be a victim of that 65 to 70% percentage rate of failed marriages. You can make it. So hang in there and trust God. He's there for you. He's never left you. Has he ever left you during this dark hour? Have you felt him every step of the way, Chris?
He's been with us every step of the way. Obviously, there's times where, you know, you need to reach out a little bit harder, a little bit farther. Times that I didn't think he was there with me, or didn't think I was there. He was there with the family when, you know, we struggled through all the after effects of the loss, just from the way my wife and I, you know, were with each other, all the other issues that came into play, you know, financial issues, you know, the friendships that actually had disappeared. Like I said, I don't know if it's them disengaging or us disengaging. The whole thought process on life, on how we were going to move forward, on how life was going to be, that something this drastic cannot be overcome, and I'm here to tell everybody out there that it can be overcome. That pain does lessen. It will never go away, and it shouldn't go away, because that's something very true and dear to your heart. But it does change, and it does get better, and it does. You are able to cope. You are able to move on. You are able to succeed. You are able to smile. I remember for the longest time I thought I couldn't go out and have a good time, because I felt that I was doing like a distrust to my son who wasn't there, I felt bad the first time I went out and actually smiled and had fun, and I'm here to tell you that's not what God wants. God wants you to enjoy your life. I don't know why this happened to us as a family, and to you know, thousands of families out there, to families that happened recently, you know, but if you just keep your faith in him, and he'll bring you that peace. One of my favorite things that my wife did for me during the whole grieving time was she wrote, it was Philippians chapter 4, verse 5 through 7, and it was about God's peace. And it was talking about God's peace is beyond any understanding. And I never understood that until I actually thought about that. And I realized that only God's peace can come over me and heal me and bring me to a different level and get me out of that darkness, that sorrow of saying, you know what, there is life. And you know, I always go back to that. God's peace is beyond anybody's realm. You know, here in the world, we only know peace as one way, but God's peace transcends all other. And that was the most amazing thing for me. And I felt his peace, and to this day I feel his peace. And whenever I have hard times, whenever I go through tough times, and I'm recently going through another loss. I lost my grandmother and my uncle 3 weeks ago in a fire. And that was just a horrific thing for our family to deal with. And now being through the process and basically saying, oh my goodness, here we go again. How am I going to get through this? You know, I have to go back to his beliefs, to what he's taught me, what I've been through, and just say, you know what, Lord, you know, I'm going to attack this thing the same way I did the other, and you're going to get me through it. You're going to walk me through it hand by hand with my family, with my parents. And I'm not letting that go. And I made a choice a long time ago. You know, I hit a fork in the road where he said, you know, what direction are you going to go, Chris? You know, you can either go against God and just live in the world, and you know, you have that right. You know, people would say, hey, you know, if that happened to me, I would, it's an easy excuse to say, well, I don't believe in God, or I don't trust in God because look what happened to me. Or you're going to follow God. And you know what? My wife and I, when we hit the fork in the road, you know, we decided that we're going to follow God. And we took that path, and you fast forward 5 years, and life's not perfect. You know, we all go through struggles. We're all through heartaches. We still struggle with the loss. You know, we're always talking about my son, who's amazing, and I can't wait to see him in heaven. But, you know, we're blessed in other ways. We're blessed with a daughter, and recently just got blessed with another child.
Wow. So was it a difficult decision to decide to have another child after all of this?
Yes, very difficult. During the process, like I said, we were in the grieving process for a while. We had talked about it, and that was one question a lot of people had asked us, you know, hey, you know, you're going to have another child. And that was the one question I thought was kind of not the right question to ask somebody who had just lost a child. Are you going to have another child basically to replace? And that, I felt, was, you know, I know that was not the intentions of the questions, but, you know, we told them in our time. And for us to have another child when we were still in mourning process, still dealing with the anxiety, depressions, and whatnot, you know, it wasn't the right time. And God knew it wasn't the right time, and he didn't give us that opportunity 5 years
when
later.
Did you know it was the right time?
When my wife told me we were pregnant, which was just last year, which, like I said, we're in a different place in our life. We're plugged into the church. It just happened, but I know it just didn't happen. I think the timing was meant to happen for a reason. I don't think we were ready to.
Yes.
We weren't ready to go through the process anytime sooner than when he gave us the opportunity to have this child. So here we are, fast forward 5 years. We've got a beautiful 8-week-old daughter who is healthy as can be. During the whole process of the birth, a lot of the doctors had come to us and asked if we want to do any genetic testing. Obviously, what we'd gone through with our son, Ty, we declined and said, you know what, we feel that there's a reason we're pregnant at this time. We left it in the Lord's hands, and here we are with an 8-week-old, beautiful, healthy, perfect little girl, and we don't feel that's a coincidence. We feel
nothing
that's
like
God's timing. Yep. God's
nothing
redemption.
Like giving, nothing like giving the devil a black eye, huh?
Yep. And you know what? We wrote it out. Like I said, just biggest thing, and I told the wife, you know, we stayed the course, you know, during thick and thin, and, you know, up until the whole process. I mean, our life was on the fast track. Life was great, you know, great jobs, great, you know, bought our house, had our first child, and had a boy, had a girl. I mean, life was grand. And then, you know, things happen, and we've dealt with them, we work with them, but things do get better. You know, here we are, you know, with another beautiful child, and this beautiful girl, I look at her every day, I smile, I appreciate everything. It was God's timing, without a doubt.
Amen. Well, I'd like to get your wife on the show sometime, because I understand she has a great testimony herself, and I can't believe we've run out of time. Where has the time gone? You have an amazing story, an amazing interview. Thank you so much for being on the show. In 10 seconds, any last thoughts or advice you can share for those going through this kind of grief, something they can take home?
Yeah, Dave, I think the biggest thing, anybody out there who's going through loss, just stay strong. Just really work on your support groups, through the church, through friends. Just realize that if you need to lean on anybody, you have to lean on God. He's the one that's going to get you through this. You stay the path, you stay the course, and I guarantee God's peace will come to you guys just like it came to myself and my wife and my family through this time. So just keep your head up, believe in the Lord, pray on it every day, and things will get better.
Great advice. Thanks again, Chris, for coming on the show and for sharing your heart. God bless you. And for those of you who are listening, we will see you next Wednesday at noon Pacific Standard Time. God bless.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.